KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
From New York and Baltimore, this is Democracy Now!
This morning early, just after midnight, two drones struck our Gaza Freedom ship called the Conscience that was in international waters off Malta.
Palestinian solidarity activists are accusing Israel of bombing an aid flotilla which was preparing to sail to Gaza. We'll hear from retired U.S. Colonel Anne Wright and Greta Thunberg. They were both planning to join the Freedom Flotilla in Malta to break Israel's devastating two-month blockade of Gaza. Plus, we'll speak to Professor Angela Davis, who gave the keynote address last night at a Jewish Voice for Peace conference in Baltimore.
Palestine is now the very center of the world. The infinite hope of people everywhere who want to see a better world.
And we'll hear from some of the hundreds of thousands who marched in May Day protests across the United States to demand worker rights, freedom for Palestine, and protection for immigrants.
May Day, it represents a very united struggle, one of intersectional solidarity.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Israeli strikes on Gaza have killed at least 22 people today. One attack on the Burej camp killed 9 members of the same family. This comes amid ever more dire warnings of mass starvation and death as Israel's total blockade on Gaza enters its third month. The World Health Organization deplored the mounting crisis, condemning the international community's complicity.
What he hears that we are breaking the bodies and the minds of the children of Gaza. We are starving the children of Gaza. Because if we don't do something about it, we are complicit in what is happening before our very eyes. We are complicit. We are causing this.
In the Mediterranean, a ship carrying humanitarian aid bound for the Gaza Strip sent out a distress signal overnight after it was bombed by drones in international waters near Malta. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition is blaming Israel for the attack, which set the ship on fire, punched a substantial breach in its hull, and cut off communication with those aboard. The Maltese government said 12 crew members and 4 civilians were confirmed safe after a nearby tug helped put out the flames. Swedish activist Greta Thunberg is among 40 humanitarian volunteers who'd been planning to board the vessel, named the Conscience, to set sail for Gaza this weekend.
The silence and the passivity, largely from the outside world, is completely deadly, and we all have a moral responsibility to act against that and to do our part to demand accountability for war criminals and our own government's complicity in this genocide and illegal occupation and siege.
After headlines, we'll have an update on the attack on the Freedom Flotilla with retired U.S. Army colonel and former diplomat Anne Wright. Israel has again attacked Syria, striking near the presidential palace in Damascus earlier today. This follows recent deadly sectarian clashes in Syria involving the Druze community, which killed over 100 people. Syria's transitional government condemned all forms of foreign intervention. President Trump removed Mike Waltz as national security adviser Thursday amid fallout from what's known as Signalgate, in which Waltz added the editor of The Atlantic magazine to a group chat about Yemen war plans. Trump said he'll instead nominate Waltz as ambassador to the United Nations and has named Secretary of State Marco Rubio as interim national security adviser. A Reuters reporter snapped photographs of Mike Waltz using a modified version of Signal at a cabinet meeting as recently as this Wednesday. He appeared to have recent exchanges with Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Vice President J.D. Vance, and Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard. The U.S. has struck Yemen on a near nightly basis since mid-March, killing over 250 people, according to reports, though experts say the true death toll could be twice as high. Thousands of people joined demonstrations across the United States Thursday for May Day, widely celebrated as International Workers' Day around the world. Protesters rallied for the rights of workers, immigrants, and Palestinians, with much of their anger directed at the Trump administration and the billionaire takeover of Washington, D.C. This is Layan Fulihan, Education Director at the People's Forum.
What the Trump administration is doing right now is, in fact, trying to reorganize the system of governance and the organization of society in the United States that would actually take more wealth from the working class to line the pockets of the billionaire class. He's trying to aggregate powers into the executive branch. He's doing this by attacking hundreds of thousands of federal workers, attacking unions, stripping people of their bargaining rights, and going after all of the small concessions that the ruling class has been forced to give the people of the United States because of the pressure that came from grassroots struggles over the past decades.
In Philadelphia, police arrested 70 people for blocking a highway as part of May Day protests, while Senator Bernie Sanders rallied protesters outside Philadelphia City Hall as part of his Fighting Oligarchy tour. In Maryland, 16-year-old high school student Zion Paras joined protests in Baltimore.
I'm here because my friends and my family and my community have seen the injustices that have occurred because of the second Trump administration, and we believe that as students with voices that we should be able to stand up and fight for those rights.
Millions took part in May Day protests around the globe, including in Istanbul, Turkey, where police arrested hundreds of people. 50,000 officers were deployed ahead of the demonstrations, which came at a time of heightened tensions in Turkey following the arrest in March of Istanbul mayor and opposition politician Ekrem İmamoğlu. A federal judge has permanently barred the Trump administration from using the Alien Enemies Act to expel Venezuelan immigrants without due process from the Southern District of Texas. Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr., who was appointed by Trump in his first term, rejected Trump's claim of an invasion by the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua to justify the expulsions. It's the first permanent ruling against Trump's use of the 1798 wartime law. The Bhutanese immigrant community says at least a dozen of its members have been caught up in the Trump administration's brutal detention and deportation crackdown. Those targeted are refugees who fled persecution of Bhutan's ethnic Nepali community and came to the U.S. under a program started nearly two decades ago by President George W. Bush. Their immigration status is not in question, but they've reportedly been targeted because they have criminal records. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, May Day protesters rallied Thursday to demand justice for Non Nhoc Nguyen, a 58-year-old Vietnamese refugee with dementia who was abducted by Immigration and Customs Enforcement and died in its custody last month. He was jailed after his annual check-in in February. His family was unable to locate him for weeks after he disappeared. They say he died from medical neglect, alone and unaware of his whereabouts. In Florida, another ICE detainee, a 44-year-old Haitian woman, died last week after spending over 2 months in an immigration jail. Florida Congressmember Sheila Sherfilus McCormick, the only Haitian American in Congress, called for an investigation into the death of Marie-Ange Blaise from the House floor on Wednesday.
Marie had been complaining about chest pain for hours. They gave her some pills and told her to go lie down. Unfortunately, Marie never woke up. Her loved ones deserve answers. They deserve accountability, like so many immigrant families who have their loved ones missing and who are hurt. These conditions at the ICE facilities are inhumane.
The Washington Post reports the Trump administration has tapped officers with the U.S. Postal Inspection Service to help federal immigration officials locate undocumented immigrants using data from mail and packages. Video of a weekend raid in Colorado Springs confirms that postal inspectors joined officers from other law enforcement agencies, including ICE, the FBI, and the Internal Revenue Service, as they arrested more than 100 undocumented immigrants on Sunday. It's the first time the Postal Inspection Service has been used for immigration enforcement since it was founded by Benjamin Franklin in 1775. The founder of the Trump family's cryptocurrency venture said Thursday that a fund backed by Abu Dhabi will make a $2 billion investment in crypto exchange Binance using a Trump-branded crypto coin. The deal could generate hundreds of millions of dollars for the Trump family, constituting a major contribution by a foreign government to the President of the United States. Robert Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen, responded, quote, "This is far more than is captured by the term conflict of interest. It is foreign policy for sale and justice for sale," he said. President Trump signed an executive order Thursday seeking to end federal funding for public radio and TV stations through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting after accusing NPR and PBS of spreading, quote, radical woke propaganda disguised as news, end quote. It's likely the order will be challenged in court, and it's unlikely to have an immediate impact since the CPP is funded for 2 years in advance to protect it from political interference. The Trump administration has cut $1 billion in mental health grants for schools that had been approved by a bipartisan Congress in the wake of the 2022 Uvalde school shooting that killed 21 people. The Education Department said the funding was canceled because it violated the Trump administration's ban on DEI, since the grants sought to increase the diversity of mental health workers in schools. The UN human rights chief warned, quote, "The horror unfolding in Sudan knows no bounds," unquote, as at least another 40 people were killed earlier this week in attacks by the Rapid Support Forces on the besieged city of El Fasher and Abu Shouk camp in North Darfur. Over 540 people have been reported killed in North Darfur over the past 3 weeks, though the actual death toll is likely much higher. The World Food Program is warning time is running out to secure food aid for millions of people in need.
Rainy season is just around the corner, and we're in a race against time to pre-position food in areas that will be cut off when the rains come. During the rains last year, we saw a major surge in hunger and in disease outbreaks. At the moment, we're reaching 4 million people, but we need to scale that up to reach at least 7 million people.
Back in the United States, the House voted Thursday to block California from banning all new sales of gasoline-powered cars by 2035. Nearly three dozen Democrats joined Republicans in their vote. California received a federal EPA waiver in 2022, greenlighting its ambitious plan to transition to zero-emission vehicles. 11 other states, including New York and Massachusetts, have also adopted the rule. If Congress overturns their plans, some 40% of the U.S. auto market could be affected. The Government Accountability Office and the Senate parliamentarians say the Clean Air Act waiver cannot be repealed by Congress, though that ruling is not binding. The Senate will now vote on the measure, where Republicans need only a simple majority to pass it. In related news, the Republican-led Senate on Thursday overturned an EPA rule that limits the seven most toxic air pollutants from industrial facilities, including chemical plants and oil refineries. It's expected to also pass in the House. And a new study published in the journal Science finds three-quarters of all bird species are in decline across North America, with the strongest declines occurring in areas where species were most abundant. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Baltimore. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Nermeen, and welcome to all our listeners, readers, and viewers around the country and around the world. I'm here in Baltimore, where thousands are attending the national meeting of Jewish Voice for Peace. Last night, among those who spoke, was the Detroit Congressmember Rashida Tlaib, the only Palestinian-American Congress member, and also the civil rights legend Angela Davis, who will be joining us live on the broadcast later.
In the Mediterranean, a ship carrying humanitarian aid for Gaza sent out a distress signal overnight after it was bombed by drones in international waters near Malta. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition, which organized the voyage, is blaming Israel for the attack, which set the ship on fire, punched a substantial breach in the hull, and cut off communication with those aboard. The Maltese government said 12 crew members and 4 civilians were confirmed safe after a nearby tug helped put out the flames. Dozens of international activists were preparing to board the boat and head to Gaza. Just before the broadcast, Democracy Now! Reached retired U.S. Colonel and former State Department official Anne Wright, who was in Malta waiting to board the flotilla.
My name is Anne Wright, retired Army Colonel, former U.S. diplomat, and I'm here in Malta with the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. And this morning early, just after midnight, two drones struck our Gaza Freedom ship called the Conscience that was in international waters off Malta. And if you remember, we've been sending ships to challenge the Israeli illegal naval blockade of Gaza since 2008. And actually, 15 years ago in 2010 was when the Mavi Marmara was attacked by the Israelis and 10 people killed and 50 wounded. I was on one of the smaller boats that were part of that flotilla. And since then, we've sent over 35 boats to challenge the Israeli blockade of Gaza. And now our flotilla is challenging not only that blockade that has kept all of the food and water and everything out of Gaza now for almost a month and a half, on the genocide that the U.S. is complicit of, the Israeli genocide of at least 55,000-60,000 Palestinians in Gaza, and then the ethnic cleansing of the West Bank. But right here, we are in Malta dealing with a brutal attack on an innocent ship, a ship that was at anchor or outside in territorial waters, waiting for us, the activists, to come on board so that we could then head toward Gaza to say to the world that here are some citizens that are willing to take action. Where our governments fail to act, we, the citizens, are trying to act to bring international attention to what is happening to the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. And to be attacked by two drones that caused massive damage to our ship called the Conscience, to see that while we cannot yet identify the source of the drones, there is no doubt in my mind that there is a history of violence that has been directed toward the flotillas from the state of Israel, and probably the complicity of the United States in it, and probably part of NATO too. So we are here to stand up for the people of Gaza, for the people of the West Bank, as international humanitarians and human rights defenders when we see a genocide going on in Gaza. We have people from 22 nations. We've got young and old, and we've got people of note. We have Yvonne Ridley, who's one of the great authors. We have a very young person, Greta Thunberg, and two of her friends from Sweden who have been doing Palestine solidarity work in Sweden and wanted to be a part of this. So we have the very young, and we have the older folks, too. We have people that are from the global south, from Argentina, from Chile, from Venezuela, from Colombia, from Brazil. We have people that are all over Europe, all over in North America. So it's a good crew that we have here. Our Malaysian contingent has been here, and we've got great heart and great spirit for the people of Palestine, which is the focus of these flotillas, to bring attention to the illegal criminal acts that the state of Israel is doing on Palestine.
That was retired U.S. Colonel Anne Wright speaking in Malta about the Gaza aid flotilla that was just attacked by drones last night. The Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, who she mentioned, was preparing to join that flotilla in Malta.
For 2 months now, not a single bottle of water has entered Gaza, and it's a systematic starvation of 2 million people. And Palestinians have been resisting the unimaginable oppression for decades. And the silence and the passivity, largely from the outside world, is completely deadly. And we all have a moral responsibility to act against that and to do our part to demand accountability for war criminals and our own government's complicity in this genocide and illegal occupation and siege. the ship is currently still, as far as I know, at the location where it was attacked, because if it would move, too much water would come in and it would sink. So that is where we are right now. What happens now is uncertain, but what is certain is that us human rights activists will continue to do everything in our power to do our part to demand a free Palestine and demand the opening of a humanitarian corridor. The coming days and the coming months and years.
That was Swedish activist Greta Thunberg speaking in Malta, where she was preparing to join the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, which was attacked by drones last night. Coming up, we'll hear from some of the hundreds of thousands who marched in May Day protests across the United States. Stay with us.
Yo puedo ser tu hermana, tu hija, Tamara, Pamela o Valentina. Yo puedo ser tu gran amiga, incluso tu compañera de vida. Yo puedo ser tu gran aliada, la que aconseja y la que apaña. Yo puedo ser cualquiera de todas, depende de cómo tú me apodas. Pero no voy a ser la que obedece, porque mi cuerpo me pertenece. Yo decido de mi tiempo, cuando quiero y dónde quiero. Independiente yo nací, independiente decidí. Yo no camino detrás de ti, yo camino de la para ti. Tú no me vas a humillar, tú no me vas a gritar, tú no me vas a someter, tú no me vas a callar, tú no me vas a denigrar, tú no me vas a golpear, tú no me vas a denigrar, tú no me vas a callar. No sumisa ni obediente, mujer fuerte, insurgente, independiente y valiente, romper la cadena de lo indiferente. No pasiva ni oprimida, mujer linda, que das vida, emancipada en autonomía, antipatriarca y alegría. Ya liberar, ya liberar, ya liberar, ah, ah. Liberar, liberar, liberar. Yo puedo ser jefa de hogar, empleada o intelectual. Yo puedo ser protagonista de mi historia y la
que That's la Anna Tijoux singing Anti-Patriarchy. In our studio in 2014, she came back to our studio recently as she launched her tour for her new album, Vida. To see our interviews with her in Spanish and in English, go to democracynow.org.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Millions around the world celebrated the International Workers' Day of May Day on Thursday, including hundreds of thousands here in the United States. Unions and immigrant rights groups led rallies in every state against the Trump administration's attack on labor protections, immigrants and asylum seekers, diversity initiatives, and federal employees. In California, fast food workers marched alongside university workers. An estimated 250,000 people marched in Chicago under a coalition led in part by the Chicago Teachers Union. Police arrested 70 people for blocking the highway in Philadelphia after a rally at City Hall, where independent Senator Bernie Sanders spoke against Trump's billionaire agenda. Sanders has been on a nationwide Fighting the Oligarchy tour with Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, who addressed a May Day rally in Manhattan Thursday night.
We should never underestimate the power of organizing right now in this moment. When they see us gather in the streets, you should know. When why go back to Washington, they talk about it and they are getting very afraid. They are getting nervous, New York. And I want to give you a perfect example of this right now. We've seen with our federal workers, them being laid off, cuts across the board. We've been seeing our VA workers and those who serve our veterans being cut off and laid off without dismissal. We've been seeing individuals calling for a ceasefire, getting locked up and suspended of their due rights. Next week, the Republican caucus is scheduled to mark up cuts, dramatic cuts to Medicaid, to seniors and vulnerable people across the country. But we've been rallying, folks. In fact, right now, as I speak here, Senator Sanders is at a 5,000-person rally in Philadelphia. And we are joined by brothers and sisters across the country. And one of the things that I've just learned coming up on this stage is we've been rallying in Idaho, 12,000 people in Idaho, 36,000 in Los Angeles, 34,000 in Denver, 23,000 in Tucson, 15,000 in Phoenix, 9,000 in Missoula, Montana, and today 6,000 here, right here in Foley Square in New York City. And as I was walking up to this stage, we found out that they have stopped and suspended next week's Medicaid cuts because they're getting too scared.
That was New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez addressing the May Day rally in New York. She's been crisscrossing the country with Bernie Sanders on their fighting oligarchy tour. Democracy Now!'s Maria Inez Terracena was in the streets as thousands marched in New York and spoke to some of the protesters.
In Queens.
What is the significance of this day? It's May Day. What does May Day mean to you and everyone who's gathered here in the era of Trump's second presidency?
Yeah, I mean, May Day, it represents a very united struggle, one of intersectional solidarity. May Day represents all of the labor wins that working people have won throughout decades, and it really represents the energy of the fight that we are ready to put up against this Trump administration, especially when we know that the administration is the enemy to the worker. And so it's a beautiful thing to say, all workers, we're standing with each other. And you see it out in this crowd. You have unions, you have community-based organizations, you have immigrant workers, queer and trans workers, you have workers of every stripe, color, and creed, and it's a really beautiful thing. And also, we know that this is the last line of defense, especially at the local level, and so getting really clear about what our agenda is, what exactly we are going to be fighting for.
Luz Campoverde.
My name is Luz Campoverde. I'm a member of Laborers Local 79. We are here to fight for our rights, to fight for our freedom, to fight for dignified work and for respect for our immigrant brothers and sisters, regardless of being undocumented or not. We want freedom to work, to support our families, our children. My message is that without immigrants, the United States would suffer. Our work has enriched this country. We are hard workers. We are fighters. We are not criminals.
My name is Queen Amor. I am a trans woman of color, born of a black Cuban refugee who is my father. And I, born from an immigrant, I understand the importance of fighting for the liberation of migrants. I chose to dress like the Statue of Liberty in shackles because the Statue of Liberty used to be a beacon of hope for those seeking refuge and those seeking asylum and those seeking a sense of liberty. People who want to work and people who want to be here and feel safe, who have a right to be here and a right to feel safe. But that is not extended to people who are black migrants, people who are brown migrants, people who speak something other than English. We're living where racism is dominating, you know, our communities. Hopefully, you know, we're able to fight for the liberation and a unified solidarity among the working class.
We don't get it!
My name is T.D. Mitchell. I'm a professional writer and a member of the Writers Guild of America. I've been a union member since I was 18. 18 years old, so the fight of labor has always been my fight. My mom is also a union member, a state employees union member, and she really instilled in me the desire to protest, to make some noise and make good trouble. I think it's very important as a disabled person, as a wheelchair user, to represent those in my community who are too ill and in bed and cannot be here to advocate for themselves. So I feel that while I have the capacity, it is incumbent upon me to do that, to represent more than just me here today.
The mighty, mighty union!
Of rallies in my day, obviously, and I gotta say, this is one of the most powerful rallies I've been to, and I think it's because the unions are here and the unions are so united, and it's just giving me a huge boost of hope that we're going to get over this authoritarian scheme and we'll come out on top. And I feel that with all my heart. I'm just grateful to the unions. We're on the precipice of losing our democracy. These authoritarian Republicans and their sycophants that are enabling them are putting our democracy at risk. I feel like they're acting with such impunity now that it's sort of scary. They must feel that they don't have to worry about losing elections anymore. And we have to show them that, yes, they do. We're not going to take this lying down.
My name is Kristen Flanders. I'm an actor and with an SDC union member. But my sign says, support federal workers. The CDC saved my daughter's life. When I was pregnant, I was told that I had contracted measles, but the only place where it could be proved was at the CDC. I'm sorry, I'm gonna cry. They had to take some amniotic fluid from me and they had to send it. There was only one place in the country that tested my amniotic fluid, and it was the CDC, and I did not have measles. So I was getting advice that I should terminate the pregnancy, and I have a great daughter because of the CDC.
Thank you for sharing your story. And what is your message to, right now we're seeing a measles epidemic, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., spreading disinformation. What is your message to him and your message to the Trump administration trying to dismantle federal agencies like the CDC?
My message to RFK would be, I went to school with kids who were severely damaged because their parents, mothers had measles when they were pregnant. And the most important thing is vaccination for public health. We have eradicated it. And it's irresponsible. And science is a great and effective and a wonderful thing. And we have to trust it.
My name is Pat. And looking at the news, reading the news, and seeing what is happening in the last 100 days, I don't think one can help but be moved and angry and inspired to do just a little bit, even if it's to be part of the march, to see if we can turn things around. It's scary. I am a naturalized citizen, and I don't think I'm any safer than anybody who's there. And when you get to feeling that way, you feel frustrated, and you just want to do something.
Let's keep it moving, y'all.
I've been a naturalized citizen for over 20 years, but it's still scary, you know? And I tell my friends, they come for them today, they're coming for us in the morning. So I just want to do whatever I can, whenever I can.
And where are you from, and what are you fighting for, and who are you fighting for?
Originally, I'm from Grenada in the West Indies. I've been here since 1968. I went to school. I worked at one company for 31 years. And I'm fighting for my granddaughter, who's 3 years old, and one who's 16 years old, because I don't think things will be the same if we continue this way. The opportunities that I've had, I don't think they'll happen. And it hurts my heart to to see people just getting picked up, and you don't hear anything about it.
Democracy Now!'s Maria Ines Taracena interviewing May Day marchers in New York on Thursday. Special thanks to Laura Bustillos. When we come back, we'll speak to Professor Angela Davis, who gave the keynote address last night at a Jewish Voice for Peace conference in Baltimore. Stay with us.
Ours is just another skin, simply slips away. You can rise above it, it will shed easily. It all will come out fine. I've learned it line by line. One coming wire, one silver thread, all that you desire rolls on ahead. Like a ship in a bottle.
That's Patti Smith performing Grateful in Democracy Now! Studios in 2015, and we are so grateful for that. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in Baltimore with Nermeen Sheikh in New York.
Jewish Voice for Peace is holding a major conference in Baltimore this weekend. The renowned activist, author, and scholar Angela Davis spoke on Thursday night and joins us now in Baltimore. Dr. Davis is the author of many books, including Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundations of a Movement. Her other books include Abolition, Feminism Now, Are Prisons Obsolete, and Women, Race, and Class. Professor Angela Davis is a distinguished professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Amy?
So we're here in Baltimore. Thousands of members of Jewish Voice for Peace have gathered for a weekend of workshops and plenary sessions. Dr. Angela Davis gave a keynote last night, and she's joining us right now. Angela, if you could start off by talking about the history of Black, Jewish, Palestinian solidarity, and why you felt it was important to address JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace.
First of all, thank you so much, Amy, for inviting me to be on the program, and thank you for your ongoing coverage. I don't know what we would do without Democracy Now. Jewish Voice for Peace has been a powerful force, since its founding, but especially in this period when we're trying to figure out how we negotiate ourselves through this horrendous combination of genocide in Gaza and on the Palestinian people more broadly, and a McCarthyist-type repression that is unfolding here in the United States, especially on the university and college campuses around the country. I think it's very important for people to recognize that as Israel represents itself as the purveyor of genocide and the forces of unfreedom, of course assisted by the United States, it is important to have a powerful force of progressive and radical Jewish people who are working in the tradition of Jewish activists who stand up not only or not primarily for their own people, but who have taught us about international solidarity and what it means to engage in struggles for freedom all over the world. So I'm really excited to be here. I should say that when I spoke last night, it was on a program with Rashida Tlaib, who's, you know, absolutely remarkable, and Omar Barghouti, who's a founding member of BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction. He was not able to attend. He was invited, but of course, neither the U.S. Nor the State of Israel wants to see him join hands with those of us here who are fighting for an end to the genocide.
Professor Davis, you've said that Palestine is a moral litmus test for the world, quoting, of course, the late poet June Jordan. If you could explain why you see it as a litmus test, and to the extent that it is one, whether what's happened in the last a year and a half demonstrates that, in fact, the world has failed that litmus test.
Well, yeah, I thank you so much for bringing up the statement that June Jordan made about the moral litmus test that is Palestine. June Jordan is someone who fought for Palestinian solidarity at a time when the majority of people weren't listening to her. I think about her all the time, and I find myself always wishing that she could witness the surge in support of Palestine all over the country, especially on college campuses, but in trade unions and in progressive movements everywhere. So thank you very much for evoking June, which we should all be doing during this period. Palestine is really the center of the world. And as someone who's been active in the Palestine solidarity struggle for the vast majority of my life, I can say that even as we experience the unimaginable grief of witnessing an ongoing genocide, a genocide that is available in terms of being able to witness the consequences all over the world. In one sense, I want to say that this is the movement we've been struggling for decades and decades. Rashid Khalidi has this amazing book entitled The 100-Year War on Palestine. It has been, you know, 100 years. And Zionism is such a powerful force, supported, of course, by the U.S. government and its position as the leading capitalist nation state in the world. You know, Zionism is has had such a power that many of us have been disappointed repeatedly over and over again. How is it that people who stood up for South Africa cannot recognize that the same kind of apartheid is at work in the occupation, the Israeli occupation of Palestine. But of course, over the last period, we've seen students all over the country. As a matter of fact, all over the world. I visited a number of universities abroad, and there are, I think, on virtually every campus in the world, there are movements to expand solidarity with Palestine. So we find ourselves in a very difficult moment, a moment of grief, a moment of witnessing the apartheid and the genocide unfolding in a way that we had never imagined before. But at the same time, we recognize that Palestine has never given up. Palestine will never give up. And this is precisely why, even in the worst possible material predicament, with the Israeli bombs having destroyed virtually the entirety of Gaza, we see the Palestinian people who are refusing to give up, who will not give up on their people, who will not give up on their history, who will not give up on their culture, and who will not give up on their ability to express solidarity with other people who are struggling all over the world. And so it's a moment that is a bit difficult to digest, but I do think that even as we cry, even as we express solidarity amidst the suffering, we should recognize that this is a moment we've been waiting for, where people all over the world are recognizing Palestine as a litmus test, and are recognizing that people in the Sudan will not be successful, people in Congo will not be successful, people in Haiti will not be successful if they do not follow the leadership of the Palestinian people, who absolutely refuse to capitulate and genuflect to Zionism and to global capitalism and to racism.
Angela Davis, we're talking to you on this week of the first 100 days of President Trump's second term. Multiple polls show that his polling is lower on issues from the economy to immigration than any modern president, and than any president in the last 80 years. The New York Times ran a front page headline, "There have never been 100 days like this." And at the same time, you have judge after judge ruling against President Trump. And this especially goes to the issue of those who stood up for Palestinian rights, who have been detained, who have been jailed, like the Columbia University student and Palestinian activist Mohsen Mahdawi, who a judge has just released in Vermont and will be graduating from Columbia, coming to New York. The judge's writing on this said, "The court also considers the extraordinary setting of this case and others like it. Legal residents not charged with crimes or misconduct are being arrested and threatened with deportation for stating their views on the political issues of the day." The judge went on, "Our nation has seen times like this before, especially during the Red Scare and Palmer raids of 1919 and 1920 that led to the deportation of hundreds of people suspected of anarchist or communist views." I'm wondering, are you seeing a sea change at this point? The cratering of the economy, the contracting of the economy, the cratering of the polls, judge after judge ruling against Trump, and hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. What does this say to you, as you've been such a longtime activist, where we all stand now?
Well, thank you for that question, Amy. I think it is important to acknowledge that Trump was not elected by a majority of the people in this country. As a matter of fact, more people did not vote for Trump as voted than voted for him. So we're not seeing a president who, you know, has the power of the people behind him. Quite the contrary. And I think that as those of us who are standing for justice and for freedom and for a better future, it's essential to recognize that we are actually in the majority, that we are on the right side of history, that we should follow the example of the Palestinian people and not give up, not succumb to the assumption that this person was elected and therefore he and his people get to dictate the direction of history. Of course, an enormous amount of damage is being done. And we know from the last administration the kind of damage that was done to the court system in this country, for which it will require untold numbers of years to recuperate from that. At the same time, I think that those of us who have been around for a long time recognize that what is happening at this moment does not dictate what is going to be happening tomorrow. Of course, the last 100 days appear to have been an eternity, and I don't think anyone has ever experienced this kind of horrendous damage being done by a person holding the executive power within such a short period of time. But at the same time, I think we should stand back and look at history and recognize that tomorrow will not be a reflection of what is happening in this moment. That, like the Palestinian people and the 100-year war against the Palestinian people, we have to hold strong. We have to engage in resistance, large acts of resistance and small acts of resistance. I am persuaded that in the end, we are the ones who are going to be able to determine the direction of history.
Thank you so much, Dr. Angela Davis. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Professor Davis, for joining us in Baltimore. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman in Baltimore. We end the show with an update on Badr Khan Suri, the Georgetown University professor and postdoctoral scholar who was arrested in March by masked federal agents outside of his home in Virginia. He had a hearing Thursday before a Biden-appointed judge who gave Trump officials 24 hours to provide details on when they decided to move Suri across at least five ICE facilities to an ICE jail in Texas, where he remains separated from his wife, who's a U.S. citizen of Palestinian descent, and his three children. For more, we're joined now by Mary Bauer, Executive Director of the ACLU of Virginia, and Nadir Hashemi, Professor of Middle East and Islamic Politics at Georgetown University and Director of the Center where Badr Khan Suri was hired as a postdoctoral fellow, Georgetown Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding. Welcome both to Democracy Now! Nadir Hashemi, if we could begin with you. You very recently went to visit Badr Khan Suri in the ICE detention facility where he now is in Texas. If you could tell us about that visit.
Well, I went to visit him because since his arrest on March the 17th, no one had actually gone down to meet him. So I figured out where he was. I called the detention facility and I was able to meet him, but of course not face to face. One of the shocking things that I learned when I went to the ICE detention facility was that Badr Khan Suri has been designated by the Department of Homeland Security as a high security, high risk threat prisoner. So he has restricted rights in the detention facility. He only gets 2 hours of fresh air a week. There are constant roll calls. to determine his presence in the prison. And you're not able to meet high-risk prisoners face-to-face. So I had to speak with him through a window via an intercom telephone. You know, he told me about the conditions that were in that prison, and they were, you know, quite shocking and quite horrific. One of the things that I took away from the meeting was really his spirit of resistance. I wrote an essay on this topic that people can look up and find more details, but Badr Khansouri was very adamant that the suffering and the pain that he has faced and that his family has been subjected to will be worth it if it helps expose, number one, the naked authoritarianism of the Trump administration, and number two, if his incarceration keeps the spotlight on the genocide on Gaza. So I was really touched by his willingness to fight back and to, you know, have his day in court and push back against the charges that have been directed against him by the Trump administration.
Mary Bauer, you're executive director of the ACLU of Virginia. If you can give us an update on what the judge said yesterday, and I know things are going to change over these next few days. Today is a deadline for the federal lawyers, tomorrow for Suri's lawyers. Explain why this Indian national, this postdoctoral graduate student and professor at Georgetown, was picked up to begin with, and what did the judge say?
Yes, Dr. Suri was picked up because he had spoken out for peace. He teaches peace. He was arrested very clearly because of his political view and family association, and that is fundamentally at odds with the values of American values. He was grabbed by masked agents without due process. He was sent more than 1,000 miles away after a series of detention facilities. We were very pleased with the judge's questions in court. They were very thoughtful questions, and they obviously sought to hold the government accountable and ask them, why was he moved repeatedly? Why was he taken out of Virginia? Why was he brought to a facility 1,000 miles away when there were beds in Virginia and he had to sleep on the floor in the facility in Texas? So there are real questions that the government is going to have to answer, and they only have until 5 o'clock today. So we are very much looking forward to seeing those answers so that we can respond.
Well, I'd like to go to Dr. Badr Khansouri's wife, Mahfez Saleh, who was speaking on Thursday outside the courthouse of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia.
I am here today not just as the wife of the political prisoner Badr Khansouri. I speak for everyone who once believed that the United States stood for freedom and justice. On March 17th, masked federal agents abducted Badr outside our home in Virginia. His unjust and illegal arrest has turned our life upside down. Our three children have not seen their father for 44 days. They have only seen him on a screen wearing a red uniform used for those considered the most dangerous people in detention center. Our very young twins are not aware of what's going on. They just want their father to come back. But our oldest have a sense. He cries all the time and tries to hide his tears from his sibling. After his arrest, Badr, who suffered from...
So Mary Bauer, if you could just tell us what's next in his case.
The judge indicated that she would rule quickly. We are expecting answers from the government. The judge is expecting answers from the government to very specific questions that really go to the heart of our case. Why was he moved in the way, in this secretive way? Why was he picked up for removal to Louisiana and then Texas? We will have until 6 o'clock tomorrow to respond, and then we do expect a ruling relatively quickly from the court.
Mary Bauer, Executive Director of the ACLU of Virginia, and Nader Hashmi. Thank you so much for joining us. Nader Hashmi, Professor of Middle East and Islamic Politics at Georgetown University and Director of the center where Badr Khan Suri was a postdoctoral fellow, Georgetown Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding. And that does it for today's show. A very happy birthday to Dennis Moynihan. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warnoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Marie Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Anjali Kamat, and Safwat Nazal. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson, Dante Toreri, and Buffy.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet. We'll be right back.